The pads were popping again on Thursday, and a new tight end emerged from the fray. All that and much more on today's episode of Locked On Colts. Let's get to it.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, Colts fans, thanks so much for tuning in and making us your first listen of the day. This is your daily podcast covering your Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Jake Arthur, joined as always by my partner, Zach Hicks. The Colts had another practice today. They were back in pads, and it was a good one. I was on hand once again, emptied my notebook over there on horseshoehuddle.com. If you guys haven't already checked it out, I will go ahead and just kind of hit all the high points from it. So at the beginning of the day, it's been pretty customary for us to get some little roster move or nugget that the Colts have done. This morning they worked out free agent offensive tackle Kendall Lamb. You know, Dennis Kelly's been banged up, Carter O'Donnell banged up, so it makes sense. Guys who did not participate in practice today: defensive tackle Byron Cowart, wide receiver DeMichael Harris, offensive lineman Dennis Kelly, like we mentioned, linebacker Brandon King, running back Devontae Price, linebacker Forrest Ryan, safety Armani Watts, and defensive tackle Chris Williams. That's kind of a laundry list of guys, but luckily you're not really playing with fire there in terms of really important guys quite yet. Speaking of really important guys, though, center Ryan Kelly did briefly go out for about a drive, got up gingerly after one play. When he left the field, Danny Penner rolled over from right guard to center, and then Jason Spriggs went in to cover right guard. Spriggs has been the second team right guard throughout camp so far, so that, I guess, makes some sense. It rained all morning, but it stopped in time for practice to be played outside, but there was a lot of issues with ball security and things like that and securing catches throughout the first half of practice, so it was a little sloppy. Much of what the team worked on during the 11-on-11s was both the deep and short red zone situations, lots of read option stuff, and then the hurry-up offense. Starting with the quarterback, Matt Ryan, of course, he was 11-of-14 passing with a touchdown. He hit his first 7 passes of the day, and it went to 6 different receivers. The first guy who had multiple catches was Mo Alie-Cox, and that was on Ryan's only touchdown of the day. His leading receivers, Pittman, Moe, Drew Ogletree, and Hines each had at least 2 catches. I think Pittman had 3. So we're seeing him distribute the ball, but he also has his favorites.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of guys to talk about here, but the one clip that kept going around, I think the Colts social posted it, was that Nyheim Hines catch along the sideline. I think he went up, contorted his body around and made a circus catch. I think it was against...
It was against Nick Cross.
Yeah, against safety. Yep, Nick Cross.
Yep.
And again, this is just how I view all this stuff. It didn't look like Hines was coming out of the backfield on that one. It looked like he was out there at receiver, and he was, you know, running a vertical route there. So again, more excitement. Nyheim Hines playing more wide receiver. But one other thing I want to ask before we jump into the star of the day is the Mo Alie-Cox connection. Mm-hmm. How has that connection looked in camp so far? Because we said it for 4 years now. This is the Mo Alie-Cox breakout year. And every year we see it for like one or two games where it's like, oh, this is Mo Alie-Cox. Like, he can be, you know, a receiving tight end, a really good receiving tight end. But it's just never really happened. You know, how has that connection looked here in camp? Does it look as good as, you know, again, early in the season in 2020, Phillip Rivers and Mo Alie-Cox had a great connection going?
Yeah, I mean, it looks natural. I mean, this is the first time that Mo has been undisputed the top tight end. You know, there's always been Jack Doyle or Eric Ebron before that as the main guy, kind of, I don't want to say in the way, but higher up in the pecking order than Mo. And Matt Ryan seems to be treating Mo like a normal tight end one. You know, he's kind of a safety blanket. Whenever Matt gets, you know, pushed out of the pocket and he has to roll out, he's looking towards the short boundaries, and it's usually someone like Mo who's right there to get it. I would say most of Mo's catches so far have been, you know, kind of within 10 yards, middle of the field, or those shorter boundary throws. So it's, yeah, it's a lot of tight end security blanket stuff. He likes him so far. As far as like tight ends that he's targeting more downfield, would probably be more like Drew Ogletree, occasionally Kylan Granson, although Granson's stuff's been a little shorter too. But no, it looks like Mo is, you know, getting all the normal tight end one targets.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he can be like an Austin Hooper type guy for Matt Ryan. You know, Matt Ryan had a lot of success with Austin Hooper, and that's what got Austin Hooper that giant contract with the Cleveland Browns a couple years ago. I'm wondering if we can see kind of a similar thing there where, yeah, it's not super high yards per catch, but there are some, you know, good touchdown numbers, good catch numbers overall, and just kind of that safety blanket. But, you know, speaking about tight ends here, the one guy who I kept seeing from everybody on Twitter, I mean, literally you could not scroll any Colts beat reporter, anybody who was at practice without seeing this guy's name. It was rookie Drew Ogletree. This is a guy who, and before I let you take away here, I will say that this is just from one source, you know, talking to a guy who has some connections within the Colts. He was saying that the Colts were pretty high on Ogletree. I know we said that a lot on this podcast, but they were kind of like, they were higher on him than Jelani Woods for this upcoming season, which is it's insane to say because Ogletree was coming from such a small school, but he's a guy who's just so far ahead in his development, great athlete, former wide receiver. So I'm not completely shocked by it. And so far in camp, Jake, I mean, today obviously is a great example for Ogletree, but has Ogletree looked like, I again, don't want to compare him one-on-one, but has he kind of looked like the more NFL ready tight end right now than Jelani Woods?
Yeah. Aside from Mo, Drew has been the most involved in the passing game and the one who makes it look the easiest, I guess. Woods has been involved and he makes some plays here or there. I think so far Woods kind of looks better in one-on-ones, and Kylan Granson had, you know, the higher volume day on Wednesday, but it did not look the same as what Drew Ogletree's looked like. Granson's, it just kind of looked like they were trying to get him the ball quickly, shorter routes and stuff. How Ogletree's day started, you know, his biggest play of the day, it's about 15 yards and 7-on-7s. Matt found him right up the gut. Drew said, you know, he saw a safety moving, so he kind of thought he was going to get it. And he just stuck a hand up and grabbed it right out of the air. It was really reminiscent of Mo Alie-Cox against the Raiders in 2018. But that, of course, caught everyone's attention. We're like, oh, wow, that was a really nice catch, whatever. But then he got like three straight catches. Like he got that one from Ryan, and then the second unit came out, and it was Nick Foles. Nick Foles throws to him two straight times. His first catch was Foles was pretty much a touchdown. The refs ruled it out of bounds, but a lot of us on the sideline thought it was a score. So yeah, he was really heavily involved today. That huge play was just the beginning of a really productive day. Otherwise. So it's really been this kind of a synopsis of camp for him so far. You know, he made the big play, but really he's been involved the whole time. We all kind of thought he would be tight end four, but he's rotated in with the ones and twos throughout camp. Today was really nothing new other than he had that one really spectacular play.
Yeah, no, and it's going to be really fascinating to see what they do with those tight ends behind, because like we said a lot, the Colts have kept four tight ends on the team at once plenty of times in the Frank Reich era. 2018, they did it for a lot of the year. 2019, 2020, they had a lot of spurts where they had four tight ends on the roster. But they always had one of those tight ends like was the injury reserve guy or a guy who didn't play very much. With these guys, it seems like you have four tight ends, but you have the one guy who's a top dog. You know, Mo Alie-Cox, he's going to get all the run. He's going to see, you know, 60, 65% of the snaps, you know, whatever it is, whatever Jack Doyle and them usually got. Mo Alie-Cox is going to be the top guy. But behind that, it could probably vary from week to week, from game to game. You know, like you could see these guys rotating a lot because I think they're all kind of on a similar level. You know, they just bring different things. Jelani Woods is your complete freak show where you want to get him down the field as vertical as possible. Drew Ogletree is kind of your more versatile player who can probably line up and block a little bit better than a Kylan Granson, but he's also more of a big body guy. And then Granson's more of a yards after catch type of guy and smooth route runner. So you could really do a lot with this grouping here, but it just kind of accentuates the thing that we've been saying a lot is, I don't want to say it's 100% a lock, but like the Colts are going to keep four tight ends. Like, they're going to keep these. Yeah. There is no chance they're cutting one of these four guys. Maybe like a trade or something, but like, nah, they're keeping these four guys.
I think it's more likely that they keep four tight ends than they keep six receivers like we've seen them do in the past. Like, there's no reason for them to want to move past any of these four tight ends, really. I just don't see it happening, especially with Drew Ogletree. Like we said, at one point we thought he'd probably be tight end four. Looking at times like the top tight end, you got to keep all four.
Right.
There's no reason otherwise. Yeah. And then a couple other guys, just quick footnotes. Michael Pittman and Ashton Doolin both stacked another solid day again. Pittman has just become really physical in the alpha receiver. It doesn't really matter who's on him anymore. Stephon Gilmore is like a true lockdown corner. We've seen it in practice so far. But one guy who's able to beat him is Pittman. And then Doolin is just out here. Again, his thing is consistency. Like, he had the really great play Wednesday, but he's showing up and he's making catches throughout the day. Chunk plays, routine plays. It's all simple for him at this point.
Love to see it. Love to see it. The depth is so big, yep. And Doolin's going to be a big part of that. So I'm excited to keep seeing him have these good days back to back to back.
Yeah. And so the Colts are the beneficiaries of signing Doolin as an undrafted free agent and developing him. For other teams, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But, you know, for Dave, hindsight is 20/20 also. And you can't change the past. But what if you could get a little help from your future self? Maybe you'd ask to borrow a little cash. Now you can with Dave. Dave is the banking app that can help you get up to $500 instantly with extra cash. That's more money to fill your tank, buy a wedding gift, or catch up on bills. You can finally tackle those expenses that have been stressing you out without any hangups. There's no interest and no credit check needed. Millions of people have already downloaded the Dave app to get financial relief that they need with extra cash. So if you're in a pinch and you need some extra help, download Dave and think of it as a helping hand from future you. Download the Dave app from the App Store right now. That's D-A-V-E. Sign up for an extra cash account and get up to $500 instantly. For terms and conditions, go to dave.com/legal. Instant transfer fees applies. Banking provided by Evolve, member FDIC. Future you will thank you. So, Zach, time to talk defense. One impression I have of this defense, number one, is it's going to be really good. And although Matt Ryan kind of had, I'm not going to say an easy day, but he kind of did what he needed to and did what he wanted early on. Again, got his first seven completions. But in the second half of practice, particularly in the hurry-up two-minute stuff near the end, the defense really stepped it up. Ryan went from going seven of seven initially to he finished 4 of 7 in his next seven passes. There was a bunch of pass breakups late, both against Ryan and Nick Foles. The defense just stepped up. They came to not only make plays on the ball, but make plays on the receivers too. They were, I'm not going to say headhunting, but they were trying to separate receivers from the ball. It was a really impressive showing, especially from the secondary, I thought.
Yeah, you know, this defense, you know, we said it a lot. They are a very proud group with a lot of guys who feel like they have something to prove. You know, it could be former defensive player of the year, Stephon Gilmore. It can be continual all-pro Darius Leonard. These guys all play with a chip on their shoulder. It's how they've always been, and it doesn't shock me to see this group coming out firing against, you know, an offense where, look, in camp, defenses are always kind of going to be on the downside of these things because, you know, you have a lot of 7-on-7s where you don't have a pass rush, or, you know, even with your 11-on-11, you're not allowed to touch the quarterback. So, you know, there are going to still be throws and stuff like that when it would normally be a sack or a pressure. Defense do kind of hit the short end of the stick a lot, but you know, seeing a lot of the good things coming out from this defense, seeing guys like Gilmore stepping up and competing, seeing you know, the young guys stepping up as well, it's always great to see. And I'm just so intrigued by what this defense is going to look like come the regular season, because it's the first time we've seen a scheme change with this defense on Frank Rivera. So how will that look, and how, you know, seamless will that scheme change be? You know, I still think that's kind of to be seen, but they have a lot of talent and a lot of good players. So it wouldn't shock me if this group does ascend past what Matt Eberflus' scheme kind of had them kind of being stagnant at the last couple seasons.
Yeah, and obviously one of the biggest jolts to this whole new defense is Stephon Gilmore. He's someone I really wanted to talk about first before we moved on, because it's we've got to show some appreciation for the Colts having a guy like this. We had a whole segment recently where we talked about it almost seems overlooked that the Colts got him. And, man, he looks so much more like the Stephon Gilmore people already know about than the guy that has been banged up and doesn't look like himself. And one thing I'm really impressed about with him is he goes to battle with Michael Pittman Jr. all the time. That's a given. Pittman is the top dog. But it almost seems like he's taking it upon himself to, like, help Alec Pierce out. Like, he doesn't give Pierce an inch of room. He doesn't give him anything free. Like, he is giving Pierce on-the-job training for any other top corner that he's going to face throughout the year. He gave him a big pop today late in the day. Ryan looked for him on kind of a dig route. Gilmore just popped him and dislodged the ball as soon as it got there. He just is not taking it easy on any of these guys. He's playing the ball. He's going for picks and things like that. He almost had two picks today, but they got broken up. It's going to be really dangerous for the Colts that they have a guy like him now.
Yeah, you know, like we said a couple weeks ago when we were talking, you know, Colts defensive backs and we were talking with Hag, having a corner in this type of scheme, in a single high scheme, that you feel so comfortable can just lock down that one side to where your single high safety can, you know, keep their attention over the middle of the field or keep their attention on the other side of the field. That is so, so huge. We saw it with the boom back in the old Seattle cover three, where Richard Sherman was so great that Earl Thomas kind of shaded the other side a little bit. And obviously this scheme is so much different from what the Seattle cover three was, but in the same kind of similar principle, it is that single high safety who has to man the whole field. You know, if you can, anytime you can limit the scope of vision for that free safety and kind of help them key in on other things rather than having to scan the whole field, it just adds, you know, it just makes life so much easier for that free safety. So Gilmore is not only just a great player in his own sense, he makes life easy for everyone around him. So I'm not shocked by how good he's playing, because again, if you watch his film from last year, he's still Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, and how Julian Blackman has been looking, that should be huge for him being at single high safety. But I'm sure you'll be totally shocked to hear it was another day where I was really impressed with certain defensive linemen. Kwity Paye had, I think, at least one tackle for loss and at least one sack. Buckner was just on fire today. You know, not a ton of work, but when he was out there, he was making a difference. He had a sack. Ifeati Odenigbo, second day in a row that he had a sack. He had Nick Foles killed from the start. It was one where they actually had to blow the whistle, which they don't always do when it's going to be a would-be sack. And then Dio was a menace. I think I gave him two tackles for loss today. He had one where, to me, I think he's looked more athletic and a little better inside, but this came from the left end. Okay. He had one where it was either Ryan Vandermark or Jordan Murray. He just kind of had him stacked and shed him and then just fell right down and killed the running back right there for probably not a loss, but it was no gain. I think it was CJ Verdell. But it just seemed like a veteran move to me. Like, he showed some patience there. So I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, you know, anytime you get to see it, and stacking those good days in camp is so big, and seeing Dio continually step up. And Ifeati Odenigbo, you know, it's a guy who I feel like we haven't given him the proper conversation here on the podcast, for lack of a better word. You know, we haven't really talked about, because, you know, we're always the Banigu, Tyquan Lewis, Dio Odenigbo. You know, those are the guys that you want to see succeed. But Ifeati Odenigbo is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like what they had with Alkadim Muhammad, but like kind of like a better version. You know, I've always been kind of a bigger fan of Ifeati Odenigbo than a guy like Alkadim Muhammad, because I think Odenigbo brings a little bit more as a pass rusher. You know, I think he can offer a little bit more. I think he had a career high of 7.5 sacks with the Vikings a couple years ago. You know, I think he's a quality player. So if he ends up settling into, you know, maybe like Cleland Farrell's role with the Raiders last year in Gus Bradley's defense, where, you know, it was like 200 snaps or so, nothing too crazy, but it was productive 200 snaps when he played, you know, and that's all the Colts really need out of that position. I think that's a quality depth player, and you want to see, you know, him again, just keep stacking those good days, because he is a quality player to have.
Yeah, he's quietly doing it again. It's been a couple days in a row with a sack, but that's not to say there hasn't been other big unseen things that the coaching staff has circled as well.
Yeah. So for all you guys who are degenerates, loving all this training camp stuff, loving the bottom of the roster guys, we have even more fun stuff for all the degenerates out there. Bet online. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your betting needs. Find all your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you covered. And like I mentioned, if you guys are degenerates and you just really want to get into the betting mood, there is odds out there for the Colts and Bills preseason game next Saturday. Yeah. The Bills are currently favored by 3.5 points. So if you are like Jake and you're a big believer in the things that, you know, Forrest Ryan can do out there, if he's healthy, you know, if you think Forrest Ryan is a big enough swing to where the Colts can beat the Bills backups, go to BetOnline today and bet on the Colts. Head to BetOnline today and use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, guys. So for this last segment, what was that?
I said, oh, yes.
Oh. I was like, oh, gosh, did he say something important? But no, guys,
you can't. I'm sure you guys can't tell whether that's me or my daughter in the background. She's been giving her input throughout the show, as you can hear.
She's doing more than me on this episode for sure. But going into our last segment, since we kind of already hit on the offense and defense, we want to give you guys an update on some of the roster battles that are happening with the Colts. You know, we highlighted a lot of these roster battles and camp battles to keep an eye on going into training camp. But now we're kind of 2 weeks through camp, and I feel like a lot of these spots are clearly taking shape. So let's start with one that Chris Ballard hinted at before camp started, one that we were circling, and one that it's actually not really been much of a battle so far, but Matt Pryor versus Bernard Raimann. This is, again, was one that we thought Raimann could come in and take a lot of OT1, you know, left tackle one snaps. But from what you've seen in camp, Jake, I mean, it's been all Matt Pryor, right?
Yeah, I've been keeping an eye out for it, and I haven't seen Raimann at left tackle with the ones yet. So obviously we've got to give this edge to Pryor here. I've heard all positives about Raimann so far, and just because he hasn't been getting snaps with the one doesn't mean he's been doing anything wrong. It just means, to me, more so, Pryor hasn't done anything to relinquish any snaps.
Right.
I think Pryor's perfectly fine. I think he knows how to handle someone like Yannick Ngakoue. Like, seeing those two, the respect they have for each other after every rep they have against each other is really cool to see. But I think, like, Bernard Raimann, for example, one of the things you see him get hit slipped up on is, like, the length or athleticism of other defenders playing below the tackle's belly, which is, you know, maybe it's the arm length thing. I don't know. But it's just something Pryor's able to handle better right now, for example.
Yeah. Matt Pryor has better length, better size, and more experience. And he played well last year. So, I mean, it doesn't shock me that Matt Pryor is kind of taking that job and running with it. But another battle that we kind of circled and were a little more intrigued about going into camp, which probably not as defined right now, is the battle for wide receiver 5, or maybe wide receiver 6 as well. We don't know how many they might keep at that position, but is Dez Patman still solidified as that wide receiver 5, or are guys like Isaiah Ford and Kiki Cootie making their case, in your opinion?
I would say it's more murky. I think we know who those top 4 are, but between 5, I can't give it to one guy or the other right now. I think the Colts probably like Patman more and hope that he comes around and does it, but he's kind of like the Kylan Granson of the wide receiver group right now. Like, he looks good. He can, you know, he can do some things, but he just hasn't really done anything big yet. He hasn't done anything to stand out and separate himself. But QT, on the other hand, I've talked a lot about him, especially lately, and I think he does a little more for you. He provides some in the run game. He's primarily a slot guy, but he can line up a little bit outside as well. So QT, like, if it was me making the decision, I would be really tempted to give QT the wide receiver 5 job right now. But again, I think the Colts probably really want Patman to take control of it.
Right. And then the other guy that we're not factoring into this is Mike Strawn. We don't know if he'll be ready for regular season, if he'll stay on the PUP list going into the regular season, if he'll be an IR candidate or something like that. We have no clue what's going on that front. Yeah. So he's another guy who factors into this, but that's still one to keep an eye out on. Another key depth spot that we were kind of circling, and Chris Ballard also mentioned going into the offseason, was the battle for snaps behind the top two interior defensive linemen. From everything that you told me, it's more the veteran guys getting those snaps. Do you think the rookies have kind of earned more snaps throughout camp, or is it still kind of those veteran guys taking a bulk of those snaps?
Yeah, so the rookies have started to catch up a little bit. Curtis Brooks and Eric Johnson, I've noticed particularly in the last couple of days, they're getting a little more look with the twos. But it's still kind of Byron Cowart and RJ McIntosh seems to be the guys getting the favor. The whole thing is kind of thrown off right now because Chris Williams, who came in as the third guy, he's been hurt since the first practice. And then Byron Cowart and RJ McIntosh, like I said, were kind of the next guys up. But Cowart was out today, at least. So it's been – Curtis Brooks is definitely, in my opinion, the next guy in there. He's who I've seen the most with the twos lately. And then Eric Johnson is getting more and more, I think. And I think he's really flashing in the one-on-ones in particular. His quickness and his speed just really jumps out. But, yeah, the young guys are catching up. I think within the next week or so, I think we'll see both of them getting a lot more run with the twos, maybe even some more with the ones. But, yeah, I think they're letting the veterans kind of lead the way for now, but they're definitely giving the younger guys the opportunities coming up.
Gotcha. So, again, that's another one just to keep watching, especially in the preseason games, because those are going to decide a lot. What happens at those spots. Going to the second level, getting now with the linebacker group, you know, we have four locks at linebacker, so there's one to two spots that are kind of up for grabs. Now, from everything that I've seen from reports in camp, from people writing about camp, the way that I would rank it just from things I've seen is JoJo Doman, Forrest Ryan, and Sterling Weatherford are kind of flip-flop there. And then Brandon King, I haven't really seen much about. Would you kind of agree that that's kind of the order right now? Like Doman has kind of separated himself as kind of that top guy as the, you know, the fifth linebacker.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Ryan, of course, has missed at least two practices now. So That's kind of taken him down a peg. But Doman's probably the guy I've noted making the most plays, even if they're subtle plays throughout camp. Plus, if I factor in what I saw him do in spring, I've got to give him the edge among those young guys. Sterling Weatherford, he's done a couple nice things, but nothing that's really jumped out yet. I don't know if he's just kind of playing catch up or, you know, it's still young for these or early for these guys.
Right.
Just because some of them are jumping out now doesn't mean the other guys won't. But I think your ranking of those guys is probably pretty accurate.
Right. And again, Doman and Weatherford are playing new positions. They did like Weatherford playing completely new position. Doman did come down the box and play some linebacker this past season with Nebraska. But yeah, Weatherford was a safety his entire career at Miami of Ohio. So this is a new role for those guys and is interesting to see. But yeah, Doman's a guy who I've seen on Twitter and in articles a lot.
Doman's looked good in coverage in particular. Most of the plays he's made have been in the passing game.
Yeah, he seems like a really good fit for the Gus Bradley kind of mold there. You know, that very cerebral linebacker there. So I think he'll fit this defense well. Now, the last position group we're going to just run through quickly here. We have two big positions of battle with this position group. First, we'll start with the outside starting corner, cornerback two or cornerback three, however you want to view it. Brandon Faison versus Isaiah Rogers. It seems like Faison has kind of taken that job at this point, right?
As far as I can tell, there's some positions out there that some guys have gotten some mixture in with the ones, but you can really tell who has a firm grip on it. Faison's one of those guys. Like, no one is really threatening his spot as that other starting outside corner.
Yep. So that would slide Rogers in as the backup slot, the backup outside guy, like kind of that fourth guy up. But then the battle for the fifth corner spot is kind of intriguing. And from what you and I were talking about earlier, you know, a couple podcasts ago, Marvell Tell kind of had a firm grasp of that position. Is it still kind of Marvell Tell? Are you seeing more guys kind of rotate in there as that cornerback five?
So Tell and Brown, Tony Brown, are probably those next guys up. You see a lot of Chesley up next in that group too. They're rotating a lot of corners. There really aren't any corners that aren't getting any run. But I think Tell is getting his due. And to his credit, last summer, I thought he just totally faded away. I barely saw anything from him other than him getting kind of beat. I think he's playing with more confidence today. He had a pass breakup today in the 2 minute drill against Ashton Doolin. You know, he physically broke it up. Like, he got his hand on the ball. You know, he did a little celebration. It just looked like he was more confident. And to me, that's great. I'm making a note that he's 2 years ago now. Or shoot, 2019, I guess, because 2 years ago was the COVID year. So he's got a lot of making up to do, but I've liked what I've seen. I like what I've seen from Tell much better this summer than I did last summer.
Yeah, and if you guys are liking all these news and notes that you're getting from Jake, make sure you are following his work there on Horseshoe Huddle. You can see his daily notes and everything. This is where I'm getting a lot of my information. I'm just regurgitating it back to him and testing his own knowledge. So make sure you guys are reading that stuff, and Jake puts even more content into those articles there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's pretty much it for us today on that. The Colts are done for the next 2 days. They'll be back on Sunday with their next practice. So we'll, of course, have that all for you Monday morning, bright and early. So we'll be back with you Monday. And shoot, yeah, you guys enjoy a couple days off. I know I'm about to.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. Make sure you guys are following us there on social medias. Like I just said, at Jake Arthur NFL, get those tweet notifications on because he is our boots on the ground there at camp, and he's getting a lot of great content there. You can follow me on Twitter at Zach Hicks too. Again, more just for the snark and the reactions to all of it. That's basically what you're going to get from me. See all of our written work over there at Horseshoe Huddle. Follow us here on YouTube, Locked On Colts Podcast. We are over 600 subscribers. We're trying to get to that 1,000 mark. So this can be my thing on header on Twitter. So make sure you guys are following us there on YouTube. And wherever you listen to your podcast, you know, rate, review, subscribe, leave us a comment. We always appreciate all the kind words or even the unkind words. You know, we'll appreciate it. You know, whatever. Any comment is a good comment.
Yeah, any press is – or all press is good press, as they say, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks again, you guys, for coming here and being with us for your first listen of the day. Now go make your second listen, the Locked On NFL podcast. That's our national NFL experts and insiders keeping you guys dialed in with the biggest stories and the latest news from around the league. We'll see you next week.